This is Natalie Harris, author of Save My Life School, A First Responder's Mental Health Journey. My new podcast, Brainstorm, which can be found on SoundCloud and my website, paramedicnatsmentalhealthjourney.com, will take you even deeper into my mind while I cope daily with the darkness and difficulties of PTSD, depression, and addiction. I will share raw experiences and opinions, as well as new treatment information I learn about along the way. I hope you can join me.
Warning. This episode contains the three A's of podcasting: adult content, adult language, and awesomeness. You've been warned. Imagine dispatching your officers out to a home invasion. You hope that when they arrive, they will be safe. Now imagine you're the officer, and upon entering the home, you encounter the suspect, and then shots fired, one down. This is what it's like within the trenches. In this episode, you will hear stories from the I Am 911 movement, a movement I started to fight the reclassification of dispatchers from clerical to protective, and bring awareness to the types of calls that 911 dispatchers answer on a daily basis. This episode will be different. Following the stories from the movement, we will hear from a former police officer who experienced an officer-involved shooting. Now, you heard the warning at the beginning, but I must warn you again and add that if you suffer from PTSD or have suicidal tendencies, you are listening at your own risk. The stories you're about to hear are all true and come from the dispatchers who live them. While some stories have a good outcome, the majority are horrifying. This is our reality. Your worst day is our every day. So let's start with a bang. I want you to imagine each story. Become the dispatcher who has taken each call, and imagine listening. I talked to you for over 10 hours, trying to convince you to put the gun down and step outside. We said the Lord's Prayer together several times. After many attempts at a peaceful resolution, the officers breached the door, and I heard gunshots in your last breath. I sat in shocked silence, waiting for information. You were a troubled soul I couldn't save, and it still haunts me. I am 911. I answered your call one winter morning. You had spun out on black ice. You were 16 and terrified. I made sure you weren't injured and your car wasn't damaged, and I stayed on the phone until you were calm enough to get back on the road. You didn't know I had rolled and totaled my truck on my way to work an hour before. I was just glad you were okay. I am 911. I hear you yelling for code 3 cover. You have one at gunpoint. I pray that you, the other half of my heart, come home to me tonight. I'm your dispatcher and also your girlfriend. You are my deputy and the love of my life. I am 911. I still remember the sound of your voice when you said you had been stabbed. I remember where you were and how my heart raced while getting you help. I remember giving you instructions on hemorrhage control while you were driving to a safe location. You made it, but it still haunts me. I am 911. I listened to your heartbreak when you found your 34-year-old daughter hanging in her bedroom. I kept you calm. As you told me, her 4-year-old daughter was down the hall. I was grateful it was you that found her, and not your granddaughter. I am 911. You called and said your house was on fire, and you were still inside. I begged you to keep crawling, to not give up. I was still on the line when help arrived, and dragged you the rest of the way out. You kept crawling, and survived. I am 911. You were so strong and determined to bring your husband back. It was Father's Day, and your daughter was getting married. He had chest pains the night before, but didn't want to ruin her big day. We tried so hard, but we couldn't save him. I'm sorry. I am 911. I stayed on the phone with you for over an hour when you found your mother dead in her bed on Christmas Day. You never knew, but I was crying with you as you told me stories about her. She sounded like an amazing woman. I am 911. I listened as you tried to revive your elderly father and teenage son at the same time. I am 911. I talked you through bringing life back to your coworker when her heart stopped beating at the next desk over. I am 911. I heard him say he loved you with his last breath, and the thud when he fell as the ambulance turned the corner. We started CPR as they unloaded gear and ran to help. They didn't get him back, and you kept blaming yourself. It wasn't your fault. You did your best. I am 911. I am the one you called the night your husband found your 15-year-old son in the garage where he had hung himself. I talked to you while you screamed for help and for somebody to do something until my officer arrived. I knew from your description that it was too late, but I talked you through helping your husband get him down and start CPR. I will never forget that night. I am 911. I was burnt out. You were 9. I answered the call. You said, "I think my daddy just killed himself." I've never met you, but I've known you for many years. You are the reason. I am 911. Through tears, you asked me to send police before your kids came home from school. Then you kicked the chair out from under you, and I heard your last breaths. I walk my dogs past your road every day. We were neighbors. I am 911. You called and couldn't breathe. Your father-in-law took the phone. He was paralyzed and confined to a wheelchair and unable to do anything but watch. You were fading. My units got there as fast as they could. I don't know if you made it. Your father-in-law was the first person to ask me my name and thank me. I will never forget that. I am 911. I waited while you searched for that child in the lake. I heard the anguish in your voice through the mic when you said, "I found him." You're still not back to work, and I worry about you every day. I am 911. I kept you on the phone for 48 minutes after your overdose. I cared. I was attentive and asked so many questions, until your photography website led me to your home address. I listened to you fade in and out of consciousness while I screamed through the phone to keep you awake. I was terrified you would kill yourself with your gun as I heard help arrive. I still hear your voice. I am 911. I was the calm and caring voice when you found your husband not breathing. Little did you know, it was my first few weeks back to work after my dad had passed away and my mother had also found him not breathing. I am 911. I left my family as the tornado sirens wailed to answer your call. I told you to put your children in the bathtub, all the while not knowing if my own child was okay. I looked out the window as the winds kicked up. My heart fell into my stomach and my mind wandered, but the ring of 911 phones snapped me back. I continued doing my job, the job that ripped me from the embrace of my daughter's arms. I am 911. I was there when you found your teenage son hanging by a belt in his closet. I told you to cut him down. I heard the fear in your voices and your pleas. I'll never know what happened to your son, but I pray for you every day. I am 911. I talked to you while you watched your mother being sexually assaulted by a home invader who threatened you with a gun and said you were next. The first officer on site to your call was shot and killed 6 years later. And I did his last call. He saved me and you. It was the least I could do for him. I am 911. You were more worried about your parents being upset that you tried cooking alone than you were about your skin peeling away from your third-degree burns. I convinced you they'd be grateful you were alive, but you died the next day. I am 911. I listened to you sob into the phone after you shot your husband to death. I will never forget your tears. I am 911. A 40-something-year-old man told me he found his neighbor beaten and bloody in her apartment. He had no idea what happened to her. He described the blood on the walls, and I could hear her moaning and gurgling. I told him to stay with her and hold her hand until help arrived. I later found out the caller was a suspect who had just raped and beat her with a hammer. I asked him to hold her hand. I asked him to stay. She's now partially paralyzed. He is in custody. I am forever haunted. I am 911. I worked the radio as your partner came on screaming that you had just been run over by a truck. When I got to see you 2 weeks later, I held you so tight. I love how you tell everyone I'm your dispatcher. I am 911. I stayed in the line with you, reassuring you help was on the way as you were hunkered down in a truck stop bathroom while your kidnapper was less than 3 feet away trying to break down the locked door standing between your life and certain death. I could hear the anger in his voice and the terror in yours. I tried to stay calm and confident despite my feeling of helplessness. I cried when I heard officers take him down on the other end. I am 911. Those are just a few stories from Imagine Listening, an extension of the podcast featuring the stories of the I Am 911 movement. We now shift to a former police officer who was involved in an officer-involved shooting. He developed PTSD from this incident and his years in public safety. It's something we're starting to see more and more, but what happens when we seek counsel from our department and are instead let go? It's rare, but it happens. We will first listen to the audio of the incident. It's short, but it shows how fast an officer-involved shooting can happen. Afterward, we will hear from the former officer himself. This is his story.
305. I lost contact with the caller.
307.
307.
We're just going 10-8. If you want, you can reassign that call to us. Take it to a beat.
10-4, 306. You can disregard.
304.
304.
160.
23-22.
304, shots fired. I got one down. Send me an ambulance and get a supervisor over here. We need to secure this house or somebody else in the house.
306, 311.
311.
We got one in the house going to the back.
I can call one out.
They're inside the house.
Sir, they're inside the house.
311 to 304.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
307.
307.
I have an insecure rear door. I just had a light come on.
39 will be en route from 65.
311 and 307. Do we have any officers in that residence?
10-9.
307, 10-9.
311 and 307. Is there any officers in the residence?
Negative. We're not in the house. I'm out front with the house contained. I think they just grabbed another one out of the house.
10-4. 311 dispatch, do you have an ambulance as well?
Affirmative.
Anything can happen in a moment's notice. We now switch to the former officer as he speaks about what happened and how he has dealt with it. This is Officer Involved, a letter to the man I killed.
A letter to the man I killed. Some people know this about me, others do not. I have killed a man. This is not a confession, it is just fact. I have nothing to hide about it. I'm not ashamed of the fact. I have no regrets about doing it. I was doing my job. At the time of your death, I was a police officer, and you tried your best to kill me. I am the police officer that killed you. I hope you were not long in your suffering, but as I am aware, during the short time I spent with you listening to your cries of agony and for mercy, the curses you spat at me, I endured as you bled to death. I endured. I hope you had a chance to reconcile with our Creator before you went and the angels bore you away to a better place. I would have prayed with you had there been time, but there was not, so I could only pray for you, and occasionally I still do. People who choose a path like the one you chose probably don't weigh into the equation the most dreadful consequences of their actions. I weighed it into my own equation every day as a police officer. I have experience with death. In fact, death and I are quite intimate with each other. You have your death. I died a physical death once, albeit briefly, but I was brought back. I wondered for what? A specific event? Your death? I never really feared a physical death. When I came back, that lack of fear was reaffirmed. I suppose that made me infinitely more dangerous as an adversary, more so than someone merely chest-thumping with a nothing-to-lose attitude at the risk of sounding cliché. I took your life. I get that. But still, you took something from me, and you changed me forever. I have been a hunter for most of my life, including a hunter of armed men. What Hemingway said about the hunting of armed men and liking it is true. You never really care for anything else thereafter. I hunt animals still, but often do not pull the trigger. Perhaps in time this will change. Killing a man is nothing to take lightly. It changes you. It changes what people think about you. You aren't the same person anymore. And still, I love life. I revel in the beauty of it, both the simplicities and intricacies of it. This solitary act does not define me. It doesn't even scratch the surface. People who do not know talk about it as though it was no big deal. But I will tell you, it is a huge deal. Get over it. Put it behind you. Try not to think about it, which are all great thoughts. Were it that easy, who wouldn't? It does not work that way. Perhaps people would begin to understand the gravity of it, were they to see a police officer choking on the barrel of their own gun trying to turn it off, or writing about it with the muzzle of a gun pressed against her temple. Some succumb to the haunting despair. I will not. To the contrary, I consider it a visit from an old enemy. I sometimes welcome the nightmares, the gore, and the violence to let it know it will never best me. The outcome is the same at its base. I live. Whatever attacks me does not. They fail. I survive. When I awaken from my sleep, if you can call it that, dripping slick with sweat, heart pounding, I am still alive. I get to relive our event every day since it happened. Not because I want to. I have no choice. It just comes calling whenever it feels like it. No warning. It just intrudes multiple times a day. What triggers it? Everything. And nothing at all. I'm always expecting the unexpected, always aware. I have a heightened tactical plan to kill everyone I meet. Only a police officer or soldier would understand that. It is not paranoia. I am situationally aware even in my dreams. Realistically, there is always a target on my back. But that's what I signed up for when I pinned on the badge. This is just part of what it is like to be a police officer. Walt Whitman said, "If you done it, it ain't bragging." But if you haven't done it, the things I have done, your opinion, armchair quarterbacking, and constant shuffling of the what-if deck really doesn't mean shit to me. Still, my adversary, I admire your tenacity. It was a fair fight for the most part. Well, you cheated a little. But still, it was a fight to the death. Your death.
So I'm dead.
But I don't hate you. Truth be told, I just feel sorry for you. Oddly, I have not shed one tear for you, and I have cried many times during my career. My lamentation over the loss of my favorite bird dog was loud, tearful, and long-lasting. Maybe because he was a true friend, and you were just what you were, my enemy, and that changes everything. You made fatal mistakes, young and invincible, tough guy full of bravado, whether false or real. You had choices, you made poor ones. I was already committed when I climbed out of my patrol car and stood on the asphalt. Perhaps you just hesitated, or maybe were just too slow. The latter is obvious fact. Everything else is merely speculation. I would like to thank you for some things, like looking over my shoulder for the rest of my life, and for cutting my career 13 years short. Thanks for helping me see that my department was totally incapable of handling the shooting investigation and subsequent homicide investigation. It perfectly illustrated the creed, a false friend is more dangerous than a known enemy. It was a real eye-opener after many years on the job to realize that incompetent supervisors and politicians have no hesitation to hang a target on the back of a good police officer for doing his job and doing it well. I wonder how many other officers have had their civil rights violated by their own departments during post-shooting investigation fiascos. Police officers have rights too. Please keep that in mind. While my career was cut short, I am thankful. I would never again, at that agency, have to endure shoddy procedures and listen about my other options in a justified deadly force scenario from cowards and idiots. Nor will I have to worry about being returned to the front lines as soon as possible without a chance to decompress, nor worry that a modicum of protection would be afforded my family, who has suffered greatly at their hands. I remember visiting the scene of the shooting on the first anniversary of your death, not knowing what I would find there. What I found there was absolutely nothing to mark the occasion. There was, however, a small token of remembrance there when I left. That struck me as very sad. The only one who bothered to pay their respects was the one who put you in the ground. Were I able, I would sit down and share a drink with you and a fine meal. I would do so before I broke bread with some of my so-called brothers or the politicians from my town who were so quick to feed us to the wolves. I mean that with the very fiber of my soul. You were a worthy adversary. I thank you for bringing a real gun to a real gunfight. I thank you for turning your attention to me and leaving the younger officer alone. I thank you for the baggage that keeps me in a perpetual state of being physically and mentally worn out. Perhaps I'll see you on the other side. If you reconciled and the angels came to take you away to heaven that early summer morning, if so, maybe we can have that drink and share a meal. If not, you made another bad choice, infinitely worse than the first, and I will never see you again. With sincerity, the police officer that killed you.
I want to thank Natalie Harris for providing a quick look at her new podcast, Brainstorm. And if you have not done so yet, please check out her new book, Save My Life School, A First Responder's Mental Health Journey. I would also like to thank the former officer for sharing his story, and to the director of Officer Involved, a gripping documentary that shows an in-depth look at law enforcement and how they cope with critical incidents, shootings, and more in raw interviews and stories. The documentary is available on iTunes, Google Play, and Vimeo. For more information, you can go to officerinvolvedproject.com. If you have any comments, questions, or you would like to be a guest on the show, send an email to wttpodcast@gmail.com. If you have an IM911 story to share, please email me or send a message to the Facebook podcast page or Twitter account. You can follow us at 911 Podcast, like us on Facebook at facebook.com/withinthetrenchespodcast. And this episode, along with all the others, can be heard on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, SoundCloud, Google Play Music, iHeartRadio, and thejabberlog.com. Have a good one.